Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network. Every 2 weeks, me and Dallas look at two films from the A24 filmography, and in between, we're lucky enough to speak with the talent involved in bringing their films to the big screen. This week, I'm joined by actress Claire Tran to discuss her role as Mink in High Life, the sci-fi film from Claire Denis. High Life takes place beyond the solar system in a future that seems like the present. It's about a group of criminals who accept a mission into space to become the subjects of a human reproduction experiment. They find themselves in the most unimaginable situation after a storm of cosmic rays hits the ship. Claire discusses her career, her performance in High Life and preparing for such a unique role, A24's reputation in France, working with Claire Denis and much more in this interview special. Due to the adult nature of High Life, this discussion contains some colourful language, the topic of sexual assault and sexual imagery. Enjoy the show and thanks to Claire for joining. What attracted you to a career in acting?
I started off being a dancer, actually. That was my first career. I went to ballet school. And when I was at the Conservatoire in Paris, I took some drama lessons. I went to the drama club and I really enjoyed it. And I kind of, it stayed in my head somewhere like, oh, dancing is cool, but acting is actually really interesting. And I might keep that for later. So I went on, I pursued the dancing and became a professional dancer when I came out of school at 21. And I was fine with that. I loved dancing, but I loved performing. So I knew that just dancing wouldn't be enough. And then I started, you know, accepting a few roles in short films. And then when I truly decided to become an actor, I went back to school. I did a studio in Paris to pursue some, you know, acting skills, try to develop some things that I hadn't learned in school as a dancer, obviously. And so that was when I was like maybe 25. So it was late. The acting came later, but it had always been in my mind that I wanted to act, but I hadn't come around to it. And it was also quite scary to, you know, change paths all of a sudden. And there we are. So it was mainly my love of cinema that made me want to become an actress, because I love movies and I wanted to be in them. I was looking at movies and saying, oh gosh, but watching them is wonderful, but wouldn't it be lovely, even better, just to be in them and to participate in the making of it? So that was really the main motivation.
Was there films and talent that you looked up to and thought, ah, that's the kind of film that inspired me to become an actor, or, oh, I love, you know, a certain actress, I'd love to perhaps kind of follow in their footsteps one day?
I don't think there was a particular film that made me want to act, but it's difficult to say. I think it's a whole. It was, honestly, discovering French cinema when I moved to France. I came here when I was 9, so I was a child, and that's around the time I started going to the cinema with my parents and watching DVDs at home. I guess discovering French cinema was something that really opened my mind and made me feel things that I'd never felt before. And it was so different from going to see ballet, it was a whole new world. But there wasn't one film in particular, nor an actress. But then as a teenager, I do remember thinking, oh, Juliette Binoche, she is definitely the best French actress of all times. And I became a huge fan.
And eventually you would go on to star with her, so dreams do come true.
Absolutely.
How hard is it to sort of break into French cinema once you've sort of completed your school and your training?
It's difficult. It's a small world, but it's not easy to get the door open. First thing was finding an agent, but that was kind of, I was lucky because being a dancer, I found someone who was interested in performers and very open-minded. So she saw my dancing stuff and a few short films and she said, oh, well, you're a performer and you can do this. So I'm gonna bet. And I've been with her ever since, actually. And then, yeah, it's been difficult because people love dancers. And they love the idea of a dancer. So they wanted me to be a dancer all my life. So people are like, oh, yes, you're a dancer. I said, yeah, but I'm an actor too. And then they'd be, oh, but are you a dancer and an actor? Or what do you prefer? And I hate when people ask that. So I've been put in a box for a long time, but now it's getting better because I've stopped dancing, basically. So, but it's been difficult, you know, yeah, becoming an actor so late.
Looking at your filmography, you had an amazing streak where you worked with some of the kind of the best names in kind of European cinema. You appeared in acclaimed films like Cloud of Sails Maria, a film I really adore, Lucy, Eden, and listeners might be kind of familiar with that, sort of some of these ones have kind of broken out into the UK and America. You know, you got to work with Oliver Alizeus, Luke Benson, and Mia Hansen-Love, one film after another. When you get that kind of streak, do you start to think, I might be, like, my career's maybe starting to come together?
I have worked with very, very interesting and talented people, I have to say. I'm very lucky. And one of the first filmmaker I worked with was Claire Denis, and she gave me my first part ever. And I realised how lucky I was to be in contact with such talented people. And then I worked with Olivier Assayas just after that. And I wouldn't say that it was like, oh, my career's taken off, not at all, because they were very small parts. So I've always been very realistic about that, and also humble, because being a small part in a huge film is very humbling, because, you know, you only have so little to do, but you have to do it really well. And I really wanted to show that I could do this. So I was just aware that I was with the right people. I was with the cool people, and I wanted to make the most of that, in the sense that I wanted to really do my best on set and then try to work with the same people again. So working with Claire on three films was a dream, really. I mean, and I hope we'll do many more. But yeah, I did want to work with the same people and kind of create this, you know, cinema family.
What was it sort of like that, obviously you've mentioned you've done three films with Claire. What is it that she saw in you and you saw in her that have kind of, has this kind of working relationship kind of continuing on?
Well, what I saw in her is, I mean, a hugely talented filmmaker. We say cineast in France because, yeah, she's more than just a director. She writes and she makes and she directs everyone, and she has a lot of integrity. That's the one of the qualities I love in her, is that she's very, very true to what she believes in, and she never makes any she never bends. So that's one of her great qualities, and I think that we found in each other a lot of integrity, and she's very direct and truthful, which I appreciate. And what did she like in me? You'd have to ask her. I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, probably the fact that I was a dancer. I have to admit, a lot of directors find it interesting to work with dancers because we have interesting bodies and that we're quite relaxed with our bodies. And Claire knows how to film bodies. She's all about that. So I don't know, we just clicked and we became friends. So I guess she saw something in my personality that would work in her world.
When did you sort of get the first hint from her about High Life? This was going to be our first sort of fully English language feature. Did you sort of have to audition for the film, or did she say, I've maybe got a role here, are you interested? How did sort of High Life come around for you two?
She talked to me about it. She knocked on my door saying, hey, I'm working on a new film. I'm writing it. It's in English, and I'd like you to read it. So that's the first thing she said to me. But she literally did knock on my door. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll read it. And at that time, she didn't speak of a role. She just said, I'd like you to read it. So I wasn't getting my hopes too high, but I was kind of hoping. I read it. I found it astonishing, really very interesting, very mysterious. And it was sci-fi, so I was yeah, it was very, very surprising to read a sci-fi piece knowing that she was going to direct it, and in English. But I read it. I wrote an email to her saying, wow, this is amazing, I want to be in it. So I did kind of say, I want to be in it. And then no news for a long time. And then she came back to me saying, I'd like you to play Mink. And that was a long time ago, because she worked on this film before it was produced for years and years. Mm-hmm. It was difficult to put together. It was only greenlit a few weeks before we started shooting, to be honest. Yeah. So I knew about High Life maybe, gosh, we shot in 2017, and I had known about this film maybe 2 years before. And when she said, oh, I want you to play Mink, I was like, oh, yes, of course, I'd love to. I accepted straight away. And then there was another, at least a year before it was actually greenlit, and she said, we're going to shoot in, it was August.
What was the kind of creative process like for the character of Mink? Did it evolve over those 2 years? And did you sort of have involvement? Because obviously you've clearly been the person she's seen, I want you to be my Mink. Did you sort of get any involvement in helping to develop that character, or was it always sort of from the script?
It was from the script. She was quite sure about she wanted someone young, very young, fragile, kind of like a dainty person, someone quite slim and athletic. So she was like a little monkey, you know, very agile and dynamic. So I think in her mind she wanted someone very athletic. So obviously she knows that I'm a dancer, and she we've worked together, so she knows how I can move. And so that was from the beginning. And then there was questions about the accents, and we decided that my English would be too posh for the role, even though I tried to explain I didn't have a posh accent, it was just RP, but anyway, for French people, I have a posh accent. So we kind of made it into an American, we all had a kind of general American on the film, except for Mia, so that was the only thing we kind of thought about. And then I did my own backstory. She didn't really tell me about Mink's past, so I made up my own story and I went along with it on my own. I kind of developed things on my own. She gave me a lot of freedom.
What was that backstory that you created for Mink, and how did you sort of develop it? Was it like mood boards, writing down like a little biography? How did you sort of kind of bring Mink to life in your head?
Well, because she hasn't got a lot of dialogue, she was very mysterious, and also being so, you know, violent, I was like, okay, I have to find something that motivates so much violence, because it can't come out of nowhere, and they are in and out of space, so how did she get there, and how come she's so aggressive? I wrote a biography. I kind of wrote down, you know, what her story was, why was she in jail in the first place, what did she do, and I kind of gave her an age, because it was written in the script that she was so young. I decided she, in the spaceship, I would have, I can't remember, maybe she was a teenager, like 19, but then she would have committed her crimes when she was a child, like 10-ish. So very, 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 very young as a child, which is freaky.
What kind of crimes did you sort of have her penciled down as having committed?
Well, I kind of decided, this is very weird to talk about this, but I decided that if she was on death row at 10 years old, she must have done something horrendous. And because she's so violent, I imagined that she started killing her schoolmates. Mm. She just kind of like, yeah, did this mass murder thing in schools. Like in America, they just start shooting people. And I imagined something horrible. Like she just freaked, like in video games, started killing people. Maybe not with a gun, because that would have been really weird, but killing her schoolmates and then death row.
I can almost imagine a sort of We Need to Talk About kind of Kevin sort of style prequel for Mink.
Totally a sociopath. Yeah.
What's it like as an actress to tap into sort of like with Mick these really violent urges and aggressive scenes that she's in? What's that like for you to kind of get into that headspace? How do you prepare for those scenes?
It's a bit scary. I hate violence. I'm not a violent person, and when I read all the killings and all that, I was like, oh gosh, am I going to be able to do this? I'm a quiet person, so I don't know. We did a bit of training with a guy for stunts, so we did like trained for like fighting and a bit of stunts. So that helped, because having a few tools made it for me as a dancer made it feel like I was doing choreography. So of course I made it very physical, and when it goes through the body, it makes it easier for me, because if you think about what you're doing, you can't do it. I mean, killing someone is just unthinkable. So I made it like a choreography, and I made it feel like I was performing a show, really. And then as for the acting, I don't know, you just get so carried away. It all goes very fast, and we didn't do many takes. So you build up something. I mean, Mink was, I think, the quiet one for a long time in the spaceship. And because she was so young, she didn't have a lot to say. She didn't have her word. So I made it feel like she was so frustrated. It was bubbling inside, and then, it kind of exploded. So it was like a frustration building up thing.
With the film, like, Denise obviously assembled this incredible cast alongside yourself. You've got Robert Pattinson, Juliette Binoche, Andre Benjamin, and Mia Goth, and you're all bound together on this small spaceship for years. Did you just get time to prepare together to play these prisoners or was it sort of trying to build that up while you were shooting?
Oh, well, we were shooting in a studio, so we were we were in the same hotel, so we were always together. Nearly 24/7, so it wasn't difficult to make it feel like we were living in a spaceship, because we practically were, and we were in Cologne, so we were in Germany, and we were not German, so it felt like we were strangers in a strange country, and every day shooting in this, you know, in this decor, and we have our meals together. It felt like we were convicts in a way.
Yes.
It was quite natural, actually, just being together, hanging out together. And we spent a lot of time prior to the shooting reading. We did table reads and rehearsing. We did talk a lot about the script together, with and without Claire. We'd talk about it in the evenings. Like, we had concerns. Not concerns, but we had questions, because it was all so mysterious.
Mm.
I remember having a lot of conversations with Mia and Rob, and just like, what do you think about this? And what about this? And what do you think about this? And how is this possible? And we were picking our brains to kind of, you know, make sense of all this. So it made it very, how do you say, in French we'd say collégial, it was a group, a think tank, mm-hmm. like a group. And we were all kind of trying to make sense of it together.
What's that first day like on set when you're now on this spaceship, you're in your little space suits and outfits? Is it easy to transport yourself to think, we're not in Cologne anymore, we're in the future near a black hole?
Yeah, definitely, because the set was all ready, and what really helped was the lighting. And I think there's this very special lighting inside of the spaceship, and like when it's nighttime it goes all blue, and during the daytime it's white, and then so it was very dramatic in that way. It felt like we were on stage, actually. And it was quite easy to feel like we were in a spaceship, because it was, you know, really quite immersive and long days, and because it was in a studio, we hardly even went outside, because we were at inside the studio, we were in the canteen next door, so it really felt like we were kind of indoors all day.
What was that scene like, the your you know, when you sort of you're bound to your bed as kind of Mink is sort of is watching sort of one of her kind of fellow friends on sort of this spaceship be sexually assaulted. You know, it's one of the most intense scenes sort of within the film. You know, it's very physical, it's very active, there's a lot of aggression and pain kind of going on. What was it like to be involved in that scene, to kind of partake in something like that? How did sort of Claire direct it, and what was it like for you to take part in?
It was a big scene. I was quite nervous about it because we didn't know how it was going to, you know, play out, because we hadn't rehearsed it. We kind of rehearsed on sets, but we hadn't rehearsed it beforehand. So it was a bit stressful. It all happened quite fast. We did some mechanic rehearsals, like, you're going to be here, Mia's going to be here, and we did it without the camera first to see who was going to do what, how Ewan was going to, what movement he was going to do coming in, because it was a very small space. What you have to know is that the bunk beds were like not even 1 meter apart, so it was a very small cell, so that made it feel really real. So we had to be able to move around with the camera, and so it was tricky. So we rehearsed on set a few times, like, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this, the camera's going to come out. And then it all happened. Suddenly, it had to be real. We got attached, and we were attached with real plastic thingies. It wasn't soft at all, so it really hurt. That helped. So it all became pretty real, and Ewan really was the trigger to the whole scene, because he was amazing, and he went straight to the point, and Claire asked him to take his shorts off, and he said yes. It wasn't really, we didn't know if it was planned or not, but she kind of like asked him on set, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And that made things really, it was real. So he came in, and we knew we couldn't do like 10 takes. So we just kind of jumped into it. And it was freaky. It was really scary, because he was really scary. And then we just all played along. It was rehearsed, but what people were going to actually do, what people's reactions were, how Mia was going to react, was pretty much improvised, you know. And we just had to make sure that no one gets hurt, because there was a lot of punching and hitting and stuff. And we did a separate take for when Ewan punches me in the head. But it was amazing. I didn't know how it was going to be. It was all very chaotic.
Is it an exciting thing when you get a moment like that where, you know, you get your first, your take, all this sort of rage and anger, and you get the climax of that scene as you take out this, you know, terrible individual? Is there something kind of rewarding about that as an actress, to be able to dive into to a scene like that?
Oh yes, definitely. It's very, very it was exhilarating, really, to be able to be a bit, you know, like the savior, and also to be able to get revenge, because I think she had so much going on, and she was so bottled up. That was really, she needed to unleash, and there was the perfect moment. And I think the moment where Ewan attacks Mia is really the moment where she's, okay, this is like one too much, because she has a special bond with Mia, and it felt really good. Also because Mia and I became friends on set. Seeing that happen to her actually really made me mad, and it was so realistic, to be honest. I mean, he was amazing. It wasn't hard to feel that anger and that rage, and it felt really good, actually, yeah, to get to kill him in the end.
Those kind of violent urges return in later on in the film, and yeah, sort of that bond with Mia Goth's character, as sort of you assault Dibs, and then ultimately you get, you know, you're sort of come up in, sadly, with a spade to the face. What was that kind of scene like, again, that you get to tap into sort of that violent moment, and it ultimately is your betrayal, really, in the end?
Well, that scene, we filmed that actually quite to the end, so I had time to think about it. And we did that late in the evening. It was quite late, so I was tired, and it was a very peaceful moment. And Claire gave me some time to, you know, get into the mood. And I remember I was alone in the corridor. There's a big corridor in the spaceship, and I was like alone. They were all in the room, Rob and Juliet, and they had the camera and everything, and they were kind of doing their thing. And I got a moment to prepare on my own in the corridor. And I think it more than anger, it was sadness. You're right, because you know, Boise was dead, and so I was grieving. It was more like a grieving thing than an anger thing. It was like, I have nothing to lose now. My best friend has gone. We're all gonna die. This is bullshit. I'm gonna kill her. But it was motivated by sadness.
What was it like to, you know, I always think of it as an actor, you always want a really good death scene, a memorable one. You get that in this film. Everyone gets a great death scene, I think, in this film. What was it like for yours to be on the receiving end of being killed by someone like Robert Pattinson?
It was fun, actually. It was really fun. And I was excited about that scene. And I didn't know how she wanted to stage it. But it was fun and physical, and I don't know, but it was all very fast. And, you know, she does die, but, I mean, you don't see my body afterwards, so I guess I was, it was very quick. That's what I can say.
It's the classic, in space, no one's ever truly dead in science fiction.
But, yeah.
What was it sort of, when the kind of the film kind of came to an end, when was the first time you saw the finished picture, and what was your reaction to it?
I saw it when it showed in Paris for the premiere. I was really stressed out. I hadn't seen anything at all. It was all very secret. And I saw it in the room with the whole audience. I think my dad was there, my agents. Yeah, there were a few, you know, relatives and friends come to support the film. And it was very stressful, but also I was very proud. So I was trying to look at the film for what it was and not just kind of like look at myself, because it's horrible to see yourself on screen. Mm-hmm. I honestly hate it. But I wanted George to enjoy the film. The first time was always difficult, so I went to see it again. There were two premieres in Paris, so I got to see it twice. And I was delighted. I mean, it was as good as I imagined, and it was very, very moving. I found it moving, especially at the end, of course, but seeing what we had done and what she had made out of it, I was proud, and also impressed. I was impressed because she managed to make a Claire Denis film in space, in English, with a huge cast, most of the people she hadn't worked with before, and she made it happen. So I was very impressed by what she did.
What was it sort of like afterwards, as people start having these debates and discussions? The film seemed to just, you know, when it got its kind of big premiere in sort of Toronto, it sort of continued to snowball. You know, I remembered sort of it was aired at Toronto and waiting for it to come here to the UK. And there's people talking about these sets. The word fuckbox became part of like mainstream discussion. What's it like to be part of a film that continues to sort of have people talking and debating about big questions of life and have things like, as I say, a fuckbox, etc., where it becomes a new word that feels like it's been added to the dictionary?
Well, yeah, I remember the Toronto thing about, you know, someone being sick in the screening room and like people being horrified, and I was in Paris, so it all seemed quite unreal for me. I hadn't seen the film, so I didn't know what to think of it. But I was like, oh my gosh, is it that bad? I mean, is it really that hardcore? I was a bit I don't know. I was really waiting. It was a big suspense, but I read the critics and the all the articles, and it built the excitement, you know, because most of the reviews were really good. I mean, it was a mix. I mean, I read things. I read critic reviews saying it was a masterpiece, and others saying this is shit, as usual. But I think with a Claire Denis film, that's what you expect, and people hate it or people love it. And it was exciting to see all the things, and you know, the fuck box and this and that, and all the fluids and the sperm and the sex. I found it funny, but I knew what we had done, and I knew that it was all also people like the sex and the violence, and that's what they, you know, they remember. But my take on her film is that it's much more than that, and I knew that it was truly about something else. Mm-hmm. But it made it attractive, you know. I made people want to see it, so it's a good thing. And being part of it is funny, because Toronto, San Sebastian, all the big festivals, I didn't go, so I saw that from afar, and I thought it was funny, but I wasn't really into all that, so.
Yeah, do you think we've got a different sensibility here in Europe and France to perhaps like America, where they'll see these things and there's someone throwing up, being sick, whereas we'll go see it and go, that's a new Claire Denis film. Yeah, this is like a normal thing on a Tuesday to watch, kind of these attitudes towards sex and kind of the bigger questions in life.
Yeah, the Americans can be, you know, they're easily shocked. I think in France, I mean, probably in the UK too, but in France, I mean, people are so used to Claire Denis films. I mean, they've been there, done that, Trouble Every Day and Beau Travail, all these very sexy films, very physical. And I think our cinema is also a bit different. I mean, very different from even the American indies. I mean, we go in places that Americans won't really go. So I think there was less shock. But then one thing I also realized is that Claire was very famous abroad, and she has a huge fan community in America, maybe even more than in France. I mean, people know her in France as an auteur, and she's very, you know, arrêté. But she's not mainstream at all. I mean, if you ask a, you know, a high school student, do you know Claire Denis? They won't know her. So it's quite niche.
It seems, I think of it when like High Life came out, there's this brand called Girls on Tea that releases t-shirts of kind of filmmakers and talent. And Claire Denis became one of the names they put on a t-shirt. Yeah. I'll email you a link. And at film festivals and so on, kind of at London, Edinburgh, places I've seen, the Claire Denis t-shirt is incredibly popular and so on, and people are just wearing, it's just her name in black writing, you can kind of kick it around. So I think there's definitely something there that she seems to sort of, you know, done so well, kind of, for, you know, you think of some French filmmakers, they never sort of seem to break out of Europe. For her, she seems to have kind of broken into the mainstream, to the fact that she's on a t-shirt, people are paying 20 quid just to have her name on their t-shirt.
Yeah, because I think she's really, she represents French independent cinema, art house cinema. I think she's really abroad. That's what, I mean, people, cinephiles know her name and know her films. I mean, I guess cinephiles have all seen one or two of her films. And High Life being, you know, Robert Pattinson starring in High Life definitely helped widen her audience. But she's very famous in cinephile, you know, circles abroad, and I mean, knowing there's a t-shirt, I definitely have to get one. But and actually, I met a guy in France. He's a journalist, cinema critic, and he has a tattoo. It doesn't say Claire Denis, but he has a tattoo of something, a verbatim, something that she said, or that's in one of her movies. I have to get a picture of that tattoo. But that's, he's a huge fan. That's awesome.
Cool. So kind of like looking back on your high life experience, what was your one favorite kind of takeaway moment or memory from being involved in this project?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Some truly lovely moments were when we trained at the Space Center. We all went to the ESA, European Space Agency, to do some training. So we got to, well, first of all, visit the whole place and speak to some astronauts. We had a conference with Tim Peake, so that was
that's
really
amazing.
Cool.
Like, just when I think I'm more jealous, oh, you get to go there. Oh, you get to be an astronaut. You get to be.
No, it was pretty cool meeting Tim Peake and hearing, you know, his story and what it's like to be in, you know, in a spaceship. And we met the French astronaut whose name I just forgot. I'll get back to that in a second. But just being in the Space Center, getting to train, to do some exercises, and that was really fun. And we did it all together. There was Robert, Mia, Juliet, Gloria was there, you and everyone was there. And so that was a bit like being on summer camp. And the other parts I really liked was, well, first day on set. That's always very memorable. Just discovering the whole set and being, you know, realizing, oh, it's actually going to happen, because I'd known about this film for so long. As there was a point where I didn't even think it was going to happen. And actually, on day one, when you know put on your little suits, it's really cool. I can't remember though. On first day, we weren't wearing our space suits for the first day. We were in our convict suits. But it was thrilling, really. So first day on sets, and last day on sets was super fun, because it was the day where. My last day was when Robert had to chuck me out of the spaceship. And so that was a bit scary, because it was a pretty big high fall.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And obviously A24 picked this film up for America. Does someone like A24 picking up a film like this, where people are going to watch High Life as a film, but also people will watch High Life as part of their watching their filmography or just having their name attached, does that sort of open doors for actresses and talent like yourself and kind of open you up to different audiences?
We were thrilled when Claire Denis told me it was A24. I was like, wow, that's amazing. And so I was very, very happy for her. And I guess, well, it really helped the film, you know, have a wider audience in America. And I mean, people are making podcasts about A24. So obviously it does open doors, and people have reached out to me, and I get emails, and you get, you know, followers on social media saying, you know, in America, especially, just loving the film. People, I mean, when people love this film, they really love it. And that's pretty awesome, I have to say. And A24 is a label, it's a stamp, it's a big help for the film. And I guess it really helped Claire Denis' cinema in all, because even if she has a wide cinephile audience, probably in America and in New York, A24 really broadened that. So hopefully will help her with her next movie and all the others. And but for me as an actress, I don't know. Because I live in France and I do a lot of French cinema, I'm not sure it's changed much for me. But I don't know. I mean, if I do other A24 films, maybe I'll get that stamp. I don't know.
What's their reputation like in France? Do they have one? Have they kind of broken in there?
The cinema industry knows about them, but not the not the general public. People don't really know the distribution field that much. I mean, in France, distributors are quite unknown from the public. But I'd say in festivals, in Cannes, obviously, people know A24, and they have an awesome reputation. They're known for having a high quality catalogue. So, I mean, I knew about it, but I think the the audience in France doesn't make the difference, really.
Have you got any for sort of favourite films? We always ask this to, for any guests that we get on. Have you got any films that stand out from their filmography for you, or ones that you're particularly fond of?
Honestly, I haven't seen a lot of them, but lately, one of the films that I really, really, really loved was Good Time.
Good Time is brilliant.
Not because Rob's in it, but honestly, it was, I mean, it was amazing. That really, really, I mean, that really blew my mind.
Yeah, that's one of the kind of most common one. People love Good. I'm the same. I think it's fantastic. And kind of finally, what can kind of people look forward to from you next? And if people wanted to reach out to you, kind of find out what's kind of coming up, where can kind of people find you online?
Best would be, I'd say, Instagram. I answer to all the messages I get if I can. And otherwise, through my agent in London or in Paris for work-related projects. I'm independent in the UK and Adéquate in France. Hopefully one day I'll get an agent in America. And that's about it, really.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. It's been so great to hear about your role and so on and your career. It's been a real treat. So thank you so much for giving up your Tuesday morning to talk with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for reaching out.
Perfect.
Chatting with you.